Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. A recent research study out of Simon Fraser University has found over 200 contaminants in the lower Fraser River, as well as fish tissue collected in the same area. These contaminants pose potential major risks for the river's juvenile Chinook salmon populations, as well as other aquatic life. Some of the contaminants in the study include antidepressants, blood pressure medications, caffeine, and even cocaine. A shocking discovery, but it's hard to know the severity of these findings without more context from the researchers involved. To learn more about the study, what these findings mean for Chinook salmon, and what can be done to address this issue, CJSF reached out to the senior author of the study, Tanya Brown, for a conversation. Tanya Brown is an ecotoxicologist and assistant professor of marine ecotoxicology at SFU. The first question we asked her was, as an ecotoxicologist, were these findings shocking to you?
Knowing the body of research and other bodies of work that have been done elsewhere, I wouldn't say it was shocking to me. It is sort of what I would have expected to find. But what's shocking to me, I guess the shocking part, is that we are finding these chemicals in our waterways, right? And this is what we're exposing, you know, important prey, not only for our marine mammal species, but also for humans. And so what we're exposing what we're consuming, you know, we are consuming Chinook salmon as well as many other salmonid species. So just thinking about it in that context as well. Yes, we were looking at juvenile Chinook. So what you would measure, say, in a juvenile Chinook relative to an adult Chinook could look very different. But it's not just looking from it from that lens. We're looking at it. What is the quality? How are we setting up these young Chinook salmon for entering their kind of their adult their marine rearing life stage that they go out to sea for, you know, 4 years and then return back to spawn in their natal stream? So are we even setting them up for success to even make it through their first year out at sea, right? So I'm looking at it from that lens. And then I'm looking at it from the lens of being like, wow, you know, okay, maybe I'm not overly surprised with what we detected, but it's very alarming in and of itself, right? And to just think about, you know, they're basically swimming in a cocktail of chemicals continuously while they're out migrating, and this is all being discharged and into our oceans, right? So I think thinking about it from that lens, then it's, you know, that's sort of the concerning and shocking side of things.
And like you had mentioned, it has like a ripple effect because these salmon are also the main prey for other species as well. And that's going to have an effect just on like the larger ecosystem as a whole.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is just, you know, contaminants is just one of many stressors that Chinook and other Pacific salmon populations are having to navigate and deal with. Right. And so it's just thinking about it from that lens and perspective, just the cumulative risks that the cumulative threats that are imposed on them at such a young life stage is concerning.
Mm-hmm. How do things such as like antidepressants or caffeine or any of these sort of contaminants like end up in the waterways?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, there's so many. If you look, I don't know anybody who's flown into YVR into Vancouver, but you always fly in, you're looking over the Fraser River. So there's just in the lower Fraser River, it's, you know, lots of industry, obviously heavily urbanized area. So stormwater runoff, every time it rains, there's a volume of chemicals that are, you know, with that rainwater is also carrying a number of contaminants, whether it's hydrocarbons from our streets, tire associated chemicals, pesticides from agricultural runoff. All of this would be coming into the Fraser River. And then also into our lower flowing tributaries that also flow into the Fraser River, where they would be at even higher concentrations. And these are also really important salmon rearing areas. So I think, it's industry, so those are our point sources. Non-point sources, when we're thinking about the agricultural runoff that I mentioned, wastewater treatment effluent, number of wastewater treatment plants all along the Lower Fraser. So there's just a number of sources coming in.
Now, I know this was a bit past the scope of the study, but looking at the data that was collected, one of the main thoughts that came into my head is what can even be done about this, or what should be done about this? And I'm wondering if you have any perspective on that to share.
Yeah, I think my hope, going into this study was to one is to bring about awareness, for the general public, but for the scientific community of and it's what we painted, detecting over 200 chemicals. This is There are far more chemicals in that system than what we detected. That's just we went out and we tried to measure as many possible chemicals as possible that are that. But there, if you look at in Canada, we have over 3,200 high volume use chemicals that are used in production in this country, and so we just don't have the capacity or the analytical capacity to measure those. So this, it's. This 200 is there's much more that these salmon are being exposed to. And so when I'm thinking about that, one thing is just one to draw awareness, in terms of what are we detecting out there. But the context of what we put it in this research that we did was it's one thing to detect a chemical or pollutant, but it's another to relate that to risk. So we were looking at it in terms of the toxicity. So every chemical has a different toxicity. And so what I mean by that is a chemical toxic at different concentrations? And so that's where the kind of the ranking or the prioritization came in of how we said, well, these ones are the kind of the priority ones. So it's really what we thought these ones are we're putting forward as these 16 chemicals as priority chemicals that we feel strongly are likely posing a risk to Chinook salmon as well as other aquatic biota in the Fraser River. And then we had other ones, 23 other contaminants, where we were like, these are watch list compounds that we want to flag as for future monitoring and that should be assessed. So you're kind of coming back to your question of, well, what can we do? I think one, the awareness, two, for authorities like our chemical regulators, just to be mindful of how can we now turn off the tap of getting these chemicals. Finding ways and being creative and innovative of how can we, look for improving even wastewater discharge. Are there other innovative ways that can or reducing stormwater runoff and cleaning up that stormwater runoff before it's entering our salmon-bearing streams, as well as agricultural runoff. So I think there's a lot of we have the capacity to improve a lot in that area.
It was interesting, like hearing you speak about the different like priorities given to different contaminants or chemicals, depending on like their severity. I guess are there some where that's sort of not even known yet what how that could be affecting salmon?
And I think there's, what we don't know is probably much larger than what we do know. So that's another scary aspect about the number of chemicals that are actually in our environment, right? So when we set on this large endeavor to try to find all the kind of we call them thresholds essentially. So studies that have gone out and looked at does this chemical cause an effect in, say, fish or other aquatic biota? And then you're comparing that to the actual concentrations that you're measuring in either the water or the tissue. What we, there was a rather short list of chemicals that we could actually do that for, if you're thinking in the context of the broader list that we were even able to measure. And so that's why we used a number of different approaches. So it's a great question that you have. And yeah, the short answer is that, we need to catch up on the science in terms of identifying the risk that a lot of these compounds that pose to aquatic biota and humans as well. You always have to put it in the context. So everything we eat has contaminants, right? Because and I think But there's a lot of other aspects about the food, the quality of our foods, kind of outweigh the exposure to those compounds and to those chemicals. So you have to think about it in kind of a few different lenses, if you will. And so, even when we're thinking about, important food items like salmon, just the nutritional value and quality kind of exceeds a lot of the exposure that, say, that humans would be exposed to. And what we were measuring, we were looking at juvenile Chinook. So most people are obviously eating adult Chinook, so very different chemicals that we would, the levels would look very different in an adult Chinook versus a juvenile Chinook. And so, and even, when I'm looking at it from a toxicologist perspective, my concern will be coming, I'll be at higher concern, say, for pharmaceuticals or current use pesticides and the impacts they might have on juvenile Chinook over, say, in the adult Chinook. We're more concerned about more of those bioaccumulative, and what I mean are contaminants that accumulate in the fat tissue or muscle tissue of an organism over time as they age. But also, when you get into a marine food web, as you feed higher in a trophic level, say for like example, our killer whales, they feed very high on they feed high in the in on in the trophic level, and so those marine mammals are exposed to much higher concentrations of these types of contaminants that tend to accumulate more in fat tissue as well as muscle tissue. So, yeah, just thinking about it in that context as well. But I think just coming back to you, you always have to, there's the cost and the benefits, right? And so, yeah, just putting that in that perspective. And we can look at, we are, there has been work from past work that my group as well as others, just looking at at how contaminated different salmonid species are, or even different populations of Chinook salmon. So there, you can look at it from that perspective as well.
So yeah, it's very multifaceted, a lot of nuance
Yes.
in. Yeah, measuring the contaminants and toxicity of certain salmonids, as you said.
Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, salmon species.
Yes. That, I believe, was all the time that I had for this interview. But if there was anything that we didn't touch on that you would like to mention or speak about, or you think is an important takeaway for this study for people to know about, what would that be?
I think just that, the Fraser is not, is not, it's unique in that, it's one of Canada's, it was once our, the largest salmon bearing, river, but it's not unique in the sense of, and it comes back to kind of your first question, was I surprised to find these 200 contaminants that we detected, or were we surprised? And I think, anywhere we look, whether we're looking in the Great Lakes or even south of the border in Washington State, it's not unique in that we would expect to find a lot of these compounds and even more compounds if we had the ability to detect them and measure them in our freshwater water, in our freshwater systems, right? And in our ocean. And so just, I think just being mindful of what we're exposing, of what is in our environment, right? And then putting the pressure on regulators and in terms of how can we turn off the tap on these contaminants.
Once again, that was our conversation with ecotoxicologist Tanya Brown on a recent research study out of SFU that found over 200 contaminants in the Lower Fraser River that are currently affecting juvenile Chinook salmon populations. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.